If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And this week I'm joined by the mighty Louis Green. Hello, mate.
Hello, Rich. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. I'm very good. Nice to see you. Do we find you at home?
Yeah, I'm at home today. I've got an unusually quiet week this week, which is nice.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Make the most of it, mate.
I say quiet. The kids are at home, so.
Oh right, yeah. It's I was just saying to you just now. We were just recording one of these with another guest, and little Bodie was kicking off the beauties of working from home. but you know, he's a baby. He don't know, does he? Although I'm sure I did see a look in his eye like, "Yeah, I'm going to ruin your day, Dad."
Well, that's my paranoia. They definitely know what they're doing, mate. They know what
they do. Know what they're doing. How you been anyway? You good?
Yeah, always. But yeah, life's good. Can't grumble. Yeah. Dad now, ain't I? So,
respect. How you finding it being a dad?
It was a wake-up call, mate. I used to say that. when anyone used to turn around and go to me like, "Oh, you'll be tired being a dad." I was like, "I'm a comedian. I'm always tired anyway." That being a dad's a different level of tired, isn't it?
Yeah. I was the same, because I'm like, I was cocky about it going, "Well, I've done this before. I know how it goes." But I don't know how it goes, because it was 26 years ago, and this level of tired is I've had my share of parties in the past where I've been knackered all day, but this is something my soul is weary.
It's probably the most accurate description I've ever had of it as well. And the thing is, because we get in late from gigging and stuff like that, it's like, all we want to do is sleep at that point, but you know the babe's going to wake up at some point and you can't just rely on mum. Do you know what I mean?
No. You just got to somehow find it within you. You got to dig deep and go, right, I just have to get on this, because I have to make sure that this little spud lives. Yeah. How old are yours now?
I've got a stepdaughter who's 7, and then my daughter's 2.5 now. So yeah.
Right.
Although I have been playing 2.5 for about 4 months, so she's actually nearly 3 now. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. I've had stepkids in the past as well, and that was a funny one, because I was young, and I had my kids, and then the stepkids, and so now you have to be a different parent to different kids. Like, you know, you're still in your stepkids' life, but obviously they got their dad, you know, still around, and you don't want to tread on his toes, and you know, so you want to parent them, and it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one to play. I don't know how you find it.
Yeah, you have that situation. I don't know if you ever experienced this, but where they go like, it's that conversation of why they don't call you dad.
Yeah,
that's the one. Like, because we'll have like a great day out and or something like that, and it's very in the moment for kids, because like we'll have a great moment out, and she's like, "Oh yeah, you're a super cool stepdad. Can I call you dad?" And I'm like, "No, you've got a dad." And then there's that awkwardness of trying to explain to them why you're not their dad.
But I've had it where the dad was a bit of a twat, and you know, he just couldn't help himself. And the amount of chats I had to have with him on the doorstep, like he'd bring them back early in the morning after they'd been at his place for the weekend, and he was always a prick. And I'd have to stand on the doorstep just going, "Mate, your kids are upstairs. I don't want to have to shout at you, but you need to up your game. Be fucking better.
I'm quite lucky with her dad because he's pretty sound, and we've known each other in the past as well, so it's been like a long term. But it's an interesting, they call them blended families now, don't they? It's an interesting concept having a blended family because there is definitely a different dynamic. I mean, you don't love them any less, that's for sure. But no. it's just an interesting. Like you're not treading on people's toes. It's exactly what you're not. You're trying not to step on dad's toes when sometimes you don't always agree with what dad does. So it's hard. It's a difficult balance.
It is a difficult balance, and I think I always talk about this now. I'm like, but what would I be like if someone was telling me how it is? Like they're my kids, but they just happen to live with you. I don't think I'd take it very well.
that's where this is my whole theory, because I know there are people that call their stepdad dad and stuff like that. And this is my whole thing. How would I feel if my daughter called someone else dad?
Yeah.
Well, like, I'd want to knock the bloke out for no reason other than the fact that my daughter's calling him dad. Do you know what I mean?
There's a bit. I was watching Moneyball again the other day, which, have you seen it? The Brad Pitt film?
Yeah. And Jonah Hill in it.
Yeah, I can't understand why it's such a good film. I think it's just well acted and it's a great script, because I'm not really into sport, but this film, there's just a line in it though where Brad Pitt's going to pick up his daughter, and the daughter's with the stepdad and the mum. And then the stepdad's clearly a bit, you know, he's just saying, oh, you know, he's obviously a bit scared of Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt's just sitting there. And the dad goes, oh, you know, she's got a phone and blah, blah, blah. But obviously, you know, if you want to discuss anything, and then Brad Pitt just goes, yes, if there's anything we need to discuss, her mother and I will discuss it together. Thank you. And I'm like, what?
Some dick energy there, isn't it?
it was just that moment of like, fuck off, mate. I'm going to, if I need to do anything, I'll do it with the mum. You can just back off, bruv. But you've had a mad few years, Louis. You know, you've had a lot to deal with. So let's talk. I don't really know how to get into this conversation. I never know how to get into this conversation. I'm not a trained interviewer. So we'll just get into it. You have a colostomy bag. And so I'm interested in how that, I want to know the story. Okay, I think
that question went well.
Yeah, like, fuck that. I'm going.
Yeah.
I thought I'd upset you. He's like, fuck that.
Nah, just literally dropped out completely.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm back now. Yeah, fine. Yeah,
you're back.
Just pick up on the same question then.
Yeah, we'll start from where we left off. If that's all right.
Yeah, no dramas.
Lovely. If you're all right, are you comfortable to talk about it?
Obviously, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, cool. Because I want to know I'm interested to know what it feels like, especially, you know, you're only a young lad as well. When I was growing up and I knew of people having, is it called a colostomy bag? What is it called? You call it something else.
So it's an ostomy. So it is a colostomy bag, yeah. But there's all sorts of different like bags. But they're all ostomies. So you can have an ileostomy bag, you can have a colostomy bag, and they all come down from like, so it's a stoma basically,
right?
And then there's
And it's growing up, it was always, you know, anyone I knew that had something like that, they were older. You know, that was an old person's thing. So it's only been in the last, I don't know, last 20 years that I've known people. Like my cousin's got a bag. And then meeting you, and it's happened in the time I've known you.
Yeah.
And I don't even know where to begin. So what happened? Let's start there. Let's start from there. What happened, Louis? What was going on before all this happened?
Yeah, for years I've always had stomach issues. And like severe pains, and nobody could ever explain. And the doctors thought they could explain. They continuously diagnosed me with IBS,
right?
And I wasn't 100% sure. But you live your life, and they sort of said that we can diet control it. So we were like, okay, I cut out everything that you can think of, mate. It got to a point where I wasn't eating anything that cast a shadow. And so we went through all this stuff and we never resolved what it was. And then one day it got so bad I just collapsed and went into hospital, had an emergency colonoscopy, and I was diagnosed with something called diverticular disease.
Okay, what's that?
And basically what it is your intestines, they sort of work to massage the poo through the intestines one way. Right. What happens is they develop little pits, and that's called diverticular disease. And those pits will then get clogged and they'll cause inflammation and infection. And that's what is causing the pain. A lot of the time it's caused by like constipation and stuff like that. But it's really common in older people, but it's like not seen so often in young people.
Yeah.
Basically, I think the days of having loads of beer and kebabs has caught up with me. And like,
right.
Yeah. Got diagnosed with that. And they were like, oh, it's fine, we can still diet manage it. And they gave me a list of foods that I can't eat, so I stayed away from them. And then one day, again, I collapsed and was rushed into hospital. And they told me that I had a perforated bowel due to the diverticular disease. And I had sepsis. So
shit.
It's in a bad way. And it was in the middle of COVID as well, which was grim.
Oh, God.
And a doctor literally turned around to me and said, look, you've got to have a colostomy bag. And I was like, not a chance.
Right, yeah.
And he was like, in that case, start saying goodbye to people then, because that's the only way out of this situation.
Wow.
Pretty much.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
So how do you process that? How do you... where'd you begin with that?
I just didn't. So from being told I needed it to going into surgery, I had 4 hours. So there was no ringing up and asking for advice, no research or anything like that. It was like, you're going in now. So there was no time to process. And it was really weird because they were treating me like a little China doll. And I thought it was unusual, because I was going in for an operation. I didn't think anything of the operation to start with. And it wasn't until afterwards that I realized how serious it was. And that was like, it was when I first met my stoma nurse, and she was like, oh, I've read your notes. You're lucky to be here. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
My God. So you've got your head around the fact, like what's going to be happening. You know, you're going to have a bag. When you first had the operation,
yeah,
and then you've come out of hospital, now you're at home and you're able to sort of deal with it, this new life that you've got.
Yeah.
What was going on then? Where did you feel? Like,
it started in the hospital because it was middle of COVID. There was no visitors. My partner was 6 months pregnant, and I'd obviously got this massive change to my body. And I had a bag stuck on the front of it. So I think the natural thing was I was absolutely convinced that my partner was going to leave me.
Really?
Yeah, because why would she want to be with me? Because my body had changed.
Yeah.
And that stems back to what you were saying, Rich, where like only older people had that. And my perception is it smell and, you know, you
couldn't
live a normal life. You couldn't, you know, which proved to be wrong in the end. But so my partner's at home. I'm ringing up my partner like daily, trying to get reassurance from her, but equally knowing that she's going through her own thing as well.
Yeah. But still difficult, isn't it? That, you know, to take that on board whilst you're processing how different your life's going to be. Yeah. And I think you have to, I mean, I'm saying this to someone from the outside, but you kind of, it's nice to get to a point where you can trust that person is going to be all right.
Yeah.
And they're going to be all right with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like the crazy thing was, I think I never should have doubted her, because actually she was solid all the way through. But in my mental state, caused further anxiety.
Do you know what I mean?
So that's where it started. And then it was like, how are the kids going to react to the situation? You know, I've got a newborn coming, you know, she's going to see her dad with a bag on his belly. How do I explain that? And all of these things were just going through my head, and I had no one there to reassure me.
Yeah.
But the stoma nurses did the coolest thing, and they had this little teddy bear made for my little girl for when she was born. And on that teddy bear had a stoma bag.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's a charity to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we gave that to the babe, and that was like really easy to sort of, it sort of became normalized then, which is nice.
That's the trick, isn't it? Making it just part of everything.
Yeah.
It's still a new thing to me. I haven't really come across many people that have had it, and I don't understand it. Like, so have you been rewired inside? I mean, this might, people listening to this go, fucking hell, Rich. I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
That's exactly it. I have been rewired inside. So what they did is they cut my large intestine out, and they've attached the remainder of the intestine to the wall of my stomach, which creates a stoma.
So right, then, yeah.
From that point on, I poo out of my stomach basically now. So
fuck.
Yeah.
And so it just comes out. And does it come out like constantly? You have no control over it.
No, I don't have any control. No control whatsoever. Which can be embarrassing in the situation where you might have some flatulence, because, I mean, you don't appreciate how much your bum cheeks muffle a fart until you've got a bag on your belly. I tell you, like,
but does it blow up like a?
yeah, man, it goes. Like, I've sat there. I've had some several situations, and I'll talk about it because it doesn't bother me. But
yeah.
I've actually farted so hard that the bags are detached from my belly.
Sorry. Oh my god. And were you, did they make you aware of something like that before you had the operation? Were they like, look, this might happen, that could happen?
Not really.
No.
Not really. it was a situation that I've never sort of experienced, I must admit, until then. But it was like, I just sat there and it just let rip, because you've got no control, like I say, it just let rip. And the bag just went, and I was like, what the, what, like... So yeah, you get, and there's a lot of funny situations around it. Like because it's a bag and it's a closed bag, you know, the wind blows up and it does. It's essentially a balloon on your belly by the end of it.
You have to put one of those. Maybe you could swap it for one of those party favors. Like, you know, the thing when you blow it, just for fun.
Yeah, do you imagine? But there's a lot of. The crazy thing was that there was a lot of adjustments for me, and like my worry about the kids adjusting to it was the least of my worries in the end, because my little girl, bless her, my stepdaughter, she was only 5 at the time, and we do a lot of things where we go out together and we just spend time together to make sure that we've got the bond that I have with my biological daughter as well.
Yeah.
And one of the first things we did together when I came out of the hospital was go to the cinema.
Right.
And you're not allowed to eat certain foods when you've had a colostomy. So one of the things is popcorn.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the kernels can like cause blockages and stuff.
Ah, oh, shit. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So we got to the cinema and we got to the counter, and my stepdaughter turned around and was like, can I have some popcorn? And the lady was like, oh, you'd like some popcorn? She was like, yeah, but only a small one. Louis can't eat any. He's got a bag on his belly. Like, just as blazing as that.
That's cool. She's all right. She's like, yeah, it's that.
Yeah.
It's just an everyday thing.
Yeah, everybody has one as far as...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Everyone knows about this. And so, yeah, I've had a lot of funny situations with it. And on the scanner, you can always see the bag on the scanner. So they love, like, searching me and stuff. And
oh, shit, yeah. Of course, going like, you're smuggling.
I love going into a nightclub with a colostomy bag, because you have to carry supplies with you all the time. So,
yeah.
But the minute you get to a bouncer or something and they look in the bag, as soon as they see their colostomy supplies, oh, yeah, yeah, mate, yeah, just go through, just go through.
just get away from me.
Yeah, don't touch me, man, don't touch me.
How often do you have to change the bag?
So it depends. So if you've got an ileostomy, you change it up to 9 times a day.
Okay.
Which is a lot, like when you think about it. I mean, you're toilet dependent at that point. But I've got a colostomy, and I've changed mine twice a day. So
okay. And like you say, you have to watch what you eat.
Yeah, yeah, to an extent. Like, I can eat a lot more than I used to be able to eat, because I don't get the stomach cramps or anything like that anymore.
No.
One of the first things I did was went out and ate a spicy chili. Because I went so long without being able to eat spicy food, and then like I just went, right, I've got to go and get a curry, and yeah, It was incredible. But yeah, it's an interesting situation because I can't feel when I'm going to go. I don't know when I'm going because there's no nerve endings in it. So
because I quite like having a shit sometimes. It's quite a nice feeling. You must miss that.
I miss the alone time in the toilet.
Yeah, you got no escape.
Yeah. Going and having a shit while the kids are playing up is like one of the best things in the world. I can't do that anymore.
Oh yeah. Oh mate, one of the simple pleasures. Just sitting in the toilet.
I've had to take up like staying at the supermarket an extra hour just to be away from them.
Oh, you had a bag emergency, sorry babe.
But yeah, I always laugh and joke. It did save my life, and
yeah,
I live a much better life with it now. But so many people have got their own like perception of what it is, which always blows my mind.
Yeah,
because everyone like the two questions I get asked straight away: does it smell?
Yeah,
yeah, which it doesn't. It's literally in a sealed bag. You can't like
right.
You know, it's medically sealed. There's no smell whatsoever. Can you go on roller coasters? That's the other question. How is that? Like, how is that your top question. Two questions? Yeah, I know, right?
I suppose when you bring in the barrier, the bars down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
You just have to flop your bag over the top of it.
So.
Oh, I suppose they know whether you're enjoying it or not because the bag will fill up really quickly.
That was one of the things that like my mates always used to joke about was like they'd be like when I first got it, and they're well wishes, do you know what I mean? But they'd be like, Are you pooing now? Are you pooing now?
Oh mate. But when you have a curry, does it make the whole, because you know when you add a curry and it makes your ass sore when it comes back out?
Yeah. Nah,
do you get that. Does it make the, you don't get any of that?
Nah, none of that, mate. That's the beauty of it. So I'm recommending it to people in the street. They ain't even got problems now.
I want one.
Yeah,
I want to get one. Because I'm just...
The worst bit about it now is if you've got an upset belly, like that's, as you can imagine, that's quite an intense time. If you've
got an upset belly in your
bag, because you're consistently changing your bag then. But honestly, I can't think of many downsides to it.
You're not going to get piles either.
No. There's no reason to sit on the bog for ridiculous hours now to get piles. You know, there's so, honestly, I can't tell you how good it is. it's the cleanest thing in the world as well because, like, it's a really simple bag change. So it's like,
yeah,
you get some adhesive remover, you spray the adhesive remover, you remove the bag, you wipe the stoma, you put a new bag on, job done.
Wow.
Yeah.
And do you have to keep going back and getting checked, like make sure the hole isn't infected and...
No, none of that. So, which is really weird because obviously, like, it's essentially an organ outside of my body. So you'd think, like, really high risk of infection and stuff like that. So I think the last time I saw my stoma nurse was probably about a year ago. She rings up, she's like, "You okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, all good. That's it. Don't need to see me again." The only thing I have had is, and this is... probably the only thing I would say is the downside. I've got what they call a peristomal hernia.
What's that?
So, obviously, when you've got the stomas formed, the muscles in the stomach don't clench up like they, or that don't connect like they used to.
Okay.
So you've essentially got a hole in your stomach. So what's happened with me is the muscles have pulled away from the stoma and my intestines are pushing out. So I've got a lump on my stomach.
Oh God.
And it's quite predominant. It makes me look probably 5 stone heavier than I am.
Right.
There's not a lot I can do about that. They said they can operate, but they kept telling me I've got to lose weight and I can't be
honest. Oh mate, it's that vicious circle. Yeah. Thing is, after all the years of stomach problems that you had and now you don't have them, to then be told, "Oh, you better cut down on your eating." You're like, do you know how many years I had where I wasn't eating anything? Because
you've got the joy of
inside of fallout.
You're a foodie as well, aren't you, Rich?
I am. Do you know what I am? I'm not a foodie. I'm not a foodie, but I do eat a lot. What it is, and I'm trying to stop, is that I'll go every journey. I'm like, oh, I've got to have a sandwich, and I've got to have this, and I've got to have that, and I'll get a meal deal, and I'll get a bag of sweets, and then I'll get a drink, like water or whatever. But then I'm like, well, I'm in the car for like 5.5 hours. So then like 2 hours later, I'm doing it again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You don't realise how many calories are in that.
Oh, mate, 100%. I've piled on weight since becoming a comic, for sure.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, other than that, it's pretty simple, to be honest with you. It, you know, like I said, there's a lot of funny moments about it. There's embarrassing moments as well. And I'll touch on a couple of these because they are what they are. And people need to know about them. But, like, I've had situations where I've been in bed with my partner and it's leaked while I was in bed.
Oh, shit.
Because you do get leaks and stuff.
And
although it's the most mortifying experience for me in the world, I'd got an upset belly at this point as well.
Mm.
So I just got up and I was like, oh, man, and it's just everywhere. And my partner's been absolutely heroic. She's just gone, right, get in there, get yourself sorted. I'll do everything else.
Oh, mate.
But, so there are downsides to it, but then... It's what it is,
don't it? Few and far between. Yeah, that's the main thing. I think you've got to remember that you're here, isn't it? And what's it? How is it attached then? Is it adhesive, did you say?
Yeah, so it's got like a rubber sort of adhesive disc around the edge of it, and it just sticks to the stomach. And actually, the stickiness of it is like you can't get it off without an adhesive remover.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So if you imagine like that, that's... sort of tight seal is what stops it from smelling and stuff like that. So, it's a marvel of where we've come because, I mean, just to give you some of the stats, there's like 180,000 people that have got stomas in the country, and most of them would have died without them. So, like, it's there's no two ways about it. It's a life-saving surgery. It's called a Hartmann's procedure. Not that you're gonna ever want to know about that, but it's quite
never heard that before.
It's quite incredible. But the interesting thing is, like, it's the bit that they've cut out of me is what they call the departure lounge, which is where the poo sort of stiffens.
Okay.
So actually, it's just like, you know, it's just a soft texture all the time. So actually, you know, it's not like I've got a t-shirt on and you can see like a shape of anything. It's you know what I mean? It's cool, to be fair.
Oh, so it just goes straight into the bag, and then I suppose. See, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that there was a bit where it kind of sits and ferments.
It ferments.
It proves, and then you go and poop it out.
No, I was just gonna say it's a mad situation, and nobody really knows about it either because, like you say, most people are embarrassed of having it, which. It's crazy because anything that gives you another shot at life, you know, what's that to be embarrassed of?
Oh, absolutely. And anyone that was to give you any shit about it would be...
Pardon the pun, yeah?
Yeah. I don't need any more shit.
I thought you were convinced you were going to get through this without a poo joke, Rich. I mean...
I did it unintentionally as well. I can't help it. But it must have been a day, you know, like when you first had it and you first... having to leave the house, and you must have been a bit apprehensive. I think, like most things, there must have been a day when you're, oh, do you know what? Fuck this. I'm not going to feel like this now. It is what it is. It's part of my life. I'm just going to fucking have this. I'm going to just get on with it. Hit it head on.
Do you know what? The absolute truth of it, Rich, the first 3 months, mate, I was probably more depressed than I've ever been in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because... I just didn't know how to process what I'd got and still convinced that my partner was going to leave me even after 3 months. It was like, oh, yeah, but she's with me now because it looks bad if she leaves me now sort of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, right.
And all these stupid things going through your head and you sort of, although you can get up and about, you're not really up for going out, so you don't see anybody. And, you know, I was in a bad, bad place, like bad place. And it was probably, I don't know, maybe 2 months after it happened, my partner said, well, let's stick a picture of you showing your back on social media. And I was like, don't be stupid. Why would I do that? And some friends of mine, for a laugh, they brought me like bag covers because you can get covers for your bag that have like got details on and stuff like that. I've got like a leopard skin one and I've got a West Ham one. And you can get all sorts, mate. They're great.
There's a West Ham one.
Mate, I've got a West Ham one. Like, there's a picture of me knocking about with it. I'll send it to you. And which, ironically, is correct because the team are a bag of shit anyway.
I'd just like to point out that Louis Green said that. It's nothing to do with me. I'm neutral. So when you get knifed.
Yeah, made a hero by the Millwall fans. Nice.
That's it. Yeah. I'll give you to try and pop your bag.
So we took this photo and we uploaded it on social media, and the response was crazy. Like, I think within the first 10 minutes of it being uploaded, there was like 100 love heart messages.
Wow.
There was just so much love.
Yeah.
And, you know, having a Facebook full of comedians, there's jokes and all of that sort of stuff. And I just suddenly realised that actually, and that was probably the turning point in my mental health sort of, I hate the word journey, but the journey at that point was actually, if everyone around me can accept it and they're happy that I'm here, then I need to accept it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, because that's the thing you're worried about, isn't it? You're worried about what people will, how people will perceive you. How you, are they going to feel? But I think this is, it's a nice, that's one of the good things about being around now, is that I know that when I was a kid growing up, yeah, people would have been cool. They would have, but when, you know, going to school, there would have been someone having a go. Someone somewhere would have been horrible. And, you know, whereas now we're more understanding of these things and we're more encouraging. We're like, no, yeah, we want you to get back out here and live your life. You know, I think that's a nice thing. And it's and having met your partner, I mean, she fucking adores you, mate. When I was watching you at that gig, at your gig, and she was at the back of the room, and she was videoing your bits for that thing you were doing, you could just see, man, she just fucking adores you. And it's a really, it was really nice.
It's that reflection thing. I look back on it now and I realise that there was never any doubt in our relationship. Do you know what I mean? There was never a doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. I get that. We get in our own way all the time.
Oh, mate, we get in our head so much. It's unreal.
Yeah. Like,
and then I realised that actually that mental health spiral was all orchestrated by me.
Yeah.
Which,
mad, isn't it? I've had full blown conversations / arguments in my head before I've even got into the flat, and like with Kate. And, like, she has no idea I've had this conversation in my head with her. And then I've made all these assumptions. I've made all these bullshit things. And I've got in, and then I'll just say to her, you feel this and you feel that. And she's like, I don't feel any of that. Where'd you get that from? And I've just built it all up in my head.
It's all built on assumption. I think it's a man thing. We create our own defence while we're building into that as well, don't we? We sit there, well, if she says this, I'm going to say this. And you know what? If she says that, I'm going to bring up something that she did like a month ago.
Yeah. Trying to plan it. I remember, I've said this on here before, when I had couples counselling before with a previous relationship, and we were both ready. We hadn't said this to each other. We spoke about it afterwards. And we'd both gone, right, oh, yeah, when I get in there, I'm going to make sure I say this, I'm going to say that, I'm going to tell that counsellor exactly what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And we walked in, and then she turned to me and she said, and so why, Rich, tell me, why is your partner here? And I went, oh, you piece of shit. No, that's not how I thought this would go down. And we both at the same time went, fuck. Because we wanted to, you know, blame the other one.
It's a weird world that we want to be that negative as soon as we walk into a situation as well, isn't it? Like,
you don't want to be the one in the wrong, do you? The counsellor was never going to turn around and say to either of us, yeah, that's the issue, it's Rich, or, yeah, you know, it's you. It was, she wants to figure it out for both of us and point out that we're both fucking it up. Whereas in that situation, that assumption, you ran away with yourself. And they say that, don't they? Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm the king of that. I assume so much bullshit, mate.
Oh, mate, I did. And like I say, coming out the other end of it, she was just incredible. And she was, she sort of said to me, let's put it on social media. And then when my stoma nurse came around following that, my stoma nurse sort of said, look, there's not many people with stomas that have got the platform that you've got.
No.
So you should seriously consider using that platform to raise awareness and do some good.
Brilliant.
And I think, like, it weirdly, Rich, it changed my comedy as well. Like, it completely changed my comedy because, like, before having that operation, I rarely spoke about my family or having a stoma or my partner on stage. I rarely spoke about it because I always wanted to keep that so separate.
Yeah.
And then after that happened, I then started talking about having a stoma. I then started talking about my family. I started, and actually, do you know what? I've progressed so much further since doing that because I'm leaving a bit of me on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's been a big thing for me.
Well, it's a very unique, it's a very unique place that you're in. Not, you know, like, yeah, there are, as you said, how many people there are with these bags around the country, but or around the world. But there's no one in comedy, as far as I'm aware.
No, there's a couple of female acts that talk about it.
Yeah,
but there's definitely, I haven't seen a male act yet, so I'm holding on to that niche, man.
It's all about finding that niche, baby.
Yeah,
that unique selling point.
Yeah, you know that. So I'm holding on to that unique selling point. But I remember the first time. I remember the first time I ever spoke about it on stage, and I was in a green room with me, where we both know him, Ashfriff.
Yeah, I know Ash. Yeah, top lad.
Love Ash. And we were in the green room, and I said, "Oh, I've written a bit about this stoma, and I really want to say it." And he was like, "Go up and do it." And I was like, "You got any advice?" He was like, "Yeah, just don't cry." And I was like, "Oh, thanks." And I got up and I did it, and I walked off, and he was like, "Mate, that's a great bit."
But this is it. Unless you do it, you don't know.
Nah.
How did it feel going up on stage the first time when you were, you'd had the operation, you were back out gigging? How did you feel before? Were you worried that people would see it? And
the first time I came back was, I was, again, it's another friend of ours, Bobby Mayer.
Yep.
I was on stage and he was closing, and I walked off stage and he sort of went, "Did you enjoy that?" And I was like, "Not really."
Yeah.
I had a good gig. I was just like, "Oh, not really." He was like, "You are not talking about what you want to talk about, and you can see that." And it was one of them moments where my mind just went, because Bobby has that effect on you sometimes, where he says something, your brain just goes, "What the hell?" And he said to me, "I like, start thinking about what you want to talk about on stage. You know, find that whole find your voice thing that they say." So I went away and scrapped everything I was doing, and I rewrote my set to involve the stoma, involve my family, and stuff like that. And the stars must have aligned or something, because this gig that I was at when I spoke about it for the first time, and actually encouraged me to. A woman came out of the audience and she said to me, she said, "My dad's got a stoma. I know exactly what you're going through."
Wow.
And I just went, "No way." And she was like, yeah, 100%. And that's when I started looking into how many people actually have them. And I just felt this, when I'd done it, I just felt this freedom and thought, do you know what? Yeah, this is who I am. So just own it.
Yeah. I think that's it with what Bobby said. I've said this before, when it comes to writing comedy, I feel there has to be an element of truth to what you're talking about. It doesn't have to be all true, but there has to be a nugget of truth for you to be able to sell the material.
Yeah.
And I think if you're doing stuff that you think the audience wants, and you don't really... So I know there's a couple of bits I've done in the past, and I've gone like, "Oh, I don't give a shit about what I'm talking about. I've just thought this is what I should be talking about."
Yeah.
And it is that once you start, once you start talking about what you really want to talk about, your comedy just fucking opens up. It's incredible.
I've never seen anything like it, because, like, a lot of my reviews are like things like, "Oh, Louis just leaves the stage and you feel like he's your mate."
Yeah.
And to me, that's probably even better than anything that anyone could say, because that's what I've always wanted, is just to build a nice rapport for the audience. And I think you're bang on with that nugget of truth. Like, I think audiences are a lot cleverer than we think they are. They sniff out.
Oh, God, yeah.
yeah, they sniff out bullshit straight away. So yeah, rewriting that was crazy. And then I had a situation where I was like, well, I've now written this into my set, so what do I do next? And like the next step is obviously to write a show about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, how the hell do you write an hour on that? And I was in a green room with another comic, and I hadn't met this comic before, and I told him the situation that I'd been through because he said he'd seen me on the news about my stoma.
Mm.
And his response was, you lucky bastard. And I was like, how is that lucky? And he was like, that's an Edinburgh show all day long.
Yeah. That's a typical comedian's fucking viewpoint. Something bad happens and we go, oh, you piece of shit.
So I started writing my Edinburgh show now, and that's where we're at.
Nice one. And you've now you're in a position where it's just part of your life, and it'll always be there. Like, they're not going to reverse it at some point. Or
so I've got the option for. This is the interesting point. I've got an option for a reversal, but I've declined it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because there's a couple of things. So the operation's really risky. It's actually more than one operation as well. And the operation can leave you with something called short bowel syndrome, which means you're toilet reliant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what does that mean? You're just on the toilet all the time?
Yeah, if you need to go, you've got about 3 seconds knowing you need to go to get into the toilet. So
I've had a few like that.
So there's that. Then there was like each operation was like a 6 month recovery period, and it worked out that I'd have to have 3 operations in total, so that's an 18 month recovery period. Then there's no guarantee that they can get rid of all the stomach pains, and they might all come flooding back. And I thought, you know what life is that? You know what I mean? I've got kids that I want to play with, you know, I've got a career I want to crack on with. So I opted to. I've told them that I don't want a reversal.
Mate, I suppose that's it. Yeah, at the minute, you know where you're at. You know how it is. But if you go back to, if you get it reversed, then you're going to end up. You could go either way. So yeah, you're right. Why would you put yourself through that if you're happy with it as it is, and it's working for you, and you're getting on with your life? Then as much as having a time on the loo is important. It's lovely, not important.
Yeah.
So that's down, mate.
I'll blow you away here, though.
Do you know what's making me laugh is that we keep using phrases like "blow you away," bullshit. We haven't stopped.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sorry, go on. Yeah, go on. Blow me away, Lou. Blow me away.
So with my decision to not have a reversal, which means I'm going to have something called a Ken butt. Right.
What?
So basically, they're going to sew my bum hole up. Straight up.
Okay.
You can laugh. Don't worry about it.
Why? Will it open up? Will it gape? What's going on? Will everything just fall out of it?
Who knows? But so basically, when you've got the option of a reversal, they leave sort of 6 to 8 inches of intestine inside the bum to reattach.
Yeah.
And that only lasts for so many years because it can cause cancer and stuff like that. So they'll remove it to reduce the risk of cancer. But removing that means that they need to sew my bum hole up. So I will no longer have a bum hole.
Well, this is not where I thought this conversation was going to go. I thought it was like an age thing. I thought your sphincter kind of gives way. You know, it's not been used for a while. You know, it's like an old barn door, and after a while, it just kind of like rots off its hinges.
the funny thing.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the thing, right? Us comics, most of the things we do now, they're via the internet. They're at home. But it's so fucking hard, isn't it? It's so hard.
Oh, mate, it does my head in. I've got, I live in the arse end of nowhere as well, so like the signal's crap anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so.
Oh, mate. Well, because you genuinely just went off then. And I was like, all right, well, he'll be back in a minute. So we're just chatting away about what we've got to do.
No, you're all right, don't worry.
I imagine if we'd be slagging you off, that would be embarrassing.
Well, mate, I've had that before. Like, where to be fair, it wasn't slagging me off. I did a gig and I was recording my gig, like we all do. And the promoter leant over to another act and went, cool, he's got good, isn't he? And I was like, what? And I could hear it on my... So I clipped it and sent it to the promoter. He was like, thank fuck it was positive.
Yeah. I've only ever... I remember doing a gig for Daryl Martin, Just the Tonic. And it was... There was a... You could see him in the box. Yeah. So he was watching the show in the box. And my... I remember this is when I was at my flat in East London and the internet quality was so bad. And I could see him get annoyed. I'd had a drink. I'd been drinking that afternoon. And I'm doing the gig and I can see him just pulling faces and being a prick. And I'm just in the middle, I just went, I can fucking see you, Daryl. I can fucking see you. It's not my fault, mate. It's not my fault. She took the good internet. She took the good laptop. I'm fucking doing what I can with baked bean cans, you fucking twat.
Oh.
Yeah, mate. Fucking hell. You're in a better place now. You know, I've seen you. You've embraced it. You know, the last time I was with you, you know, you're having a great time on stage. It's almost like, it's like you're a different person. You've been reborn.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely how it feels as well. Do you know what I mean? I've got a whole new outlook on life and, you know, yeah, I just realised that, you know, you never know when you're going to check out. So fucking make the most of it. Do you know what I mean?
And fucking make the most of it, mate.
Yeah.
Do you know what? The more conversations I have with people, the more I realise that you're so right. I was talking to Laura Smith about this before because we were talking about, because she got diagnosed with cancer and thankfully she's out the other side. But I was just saying, I've got a friend of mine messaged me a little while ago and just basically say goodbye. And that was like, what the fuck do you do with that?
Yeah.
And then someone else that's really close to me, they've just been diagnosed with breast cancer. And you're just like, do you know what? Despite all the shit that I moan about, it's like, I still haven't got to deal with that. Like, the shit you've gone through, you know, I'm like, do you know what? That I need to just fucking have a word with myself. I'm doing all right, you know?
Yeah. I must admit, like, it's a weird situation because as I'm getting older as well, I'm starting to, like, I remember having a period in my life till I was about, I don't know, 25, 26, where I hadn't known anyone that had passed away.
Yeah.
And now I'm knowing people that are like my age that have passed away. And it's just like, you know, I want, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not in a situation where I feel down or anything like that. But I just sit there thinking, you know, where would I be if I hadn't have had this wake up call? And, you know, would I still be just skulking about? And,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
But that's it. Sometimes we need, it doesn't need to necessarily be as extreme as what you've been through, which is completely life changing. Like,
yeah.
You know, I know we've joked today, and anyone listening, you know, it sounds like I'm being flippant, but I'm not. It's how you, this is how you deal with things, is, you know, you have a bit of humour about it. But so then, you know, you do have to get, you are in a position now where you can just go, fuck it.
Yeah.
Fuck it. I've been through the worst. I'm now going to get out there just in case anything else happens. I think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it gives you just an opportunity to appreciate everything. And, like, it's weird. Like, this is going to sound so cheesy, but that sun shines a bit brighter. Do you know what I mean? That,
yeah. You
know, everything just feels a little bit better because you've had this second opportunity. So, yeah.
So, can you eat, mentioning cheese, can you have cheese? You're not lactose intolerant or anything like that.
Mate, even if I couldn't have cheese, I'd be eating cheese, bro.
This is the one problem I have. Like Kate said to me the other day, she goes, you know what? All we do is eat pizza, but in different forms. It's always bread, cheese, and something. You know what I mean?
100%. Oh, mate, I'm a sucker for bread. Bread's my one. Like, they told me when I had my operation, they were like, don't eat any more seeded bread. And I've completely ignored that advice.
Oh, mate, I can't handle it. I love an uncut loaf, a fresh uncut loaf. Yeah. I will fucking holler out in the middle and fuck it. I love it so much. I love it. Bread is I'm turning into bread. That's why I'm getting so big. But Louis, mate, honestly, it's been lovely having you on. And I'm sorry, I apologise if the questions were a bit clunky and a bit intrusive, but I wanted to just get a better understanding for myself because I haven't really spoken to anyone who's had this before. And anyone who's listening, I wanted, you know, I ask the questions in this way so people can maybe, you know, figure it out for themselves. But
yeah,
I think it's great. And so you're working on the show now?
Yeah, working on the show now. As always, just going around the country doing a load of work in progresses. I'm going up to Edinburgh to take it as a work in progress for the last week.
Brilliant.
And then hopefully debut it next year. So we'll see what happens. But
excellent.
Anyone that is listening that's got a colostomy bag, feel free to reach out with me if you need any advice. I'm not medically trained, but I've got the experience. So I'm more than happy to talk to anyone.
That's really good of you, Louis. And we're going to put links in connected to this episode where people can get help and advice and things like that. And so if there's anywhere you think people should look?
Colostomy UK are amazing. Like, there's loads of charities out there, but Colostomy UK are the ones. They've been superb to me. There's loads of like really supportive Facebook groups as well. So yeah, just look and don't bury yourself away because that's the worst thing you can do.
Fantastic. Louis, mate, honestly, I'm not just saying this, you're an inspiration, mate. And long may you continue doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Has been Insane in the Membrane. This has been Louis Green. This has been Louis Green's bag. I can't believe I just
said called that Reggie, by the way.
Is it called Reggie?
Yeah.
Why Reggie? Just like the craze.
Well, we didn't find out what our baby was going to be. So we didn't know if it was going to be a boy or a girl. And I wanted Reggie for a boy. And my missus was like, absolutely not. So I named my customer Reggie.
Oh, Louis, mate. Well, Louis and Reggie, thank you for joining us today. This has been Insane in the Membrane. I've been Rich Wilson, and we will see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.